Appreciate the good song service this morning, and especially Brother Kenny's humble prayer, and before that, Brother Randall's prayer. And come for you this morning, the same as always. I can't be here without prayers. I can't be without the help of the Lord in helping me to hopefully give you something that He knows you need, and that's my prayer to Him, is that He will help me do that. It's Mother's Day, and I like Brother Kenny said, it's one of those days we have a day of the year to celebrate, and I know why it was created initially. It was probably for commercial purposes as much as anything else. I know the flower dealers do good today, and the card distributors do good today. It's kind of like Christmas, where we pick a day to celebrate Christ's birth, and Easter, when we celebrate His resurrection. I'm a lot like that with Mother's Day. That's something we ought to celebrate year-round. Not just one day, but we ought to recognize there are specific rules that go with Mother's Day and the observance of honor and appreciation for our mothers. And that's on my mind a little bit this morning, and I want to talk to you about that. I'm going to be speaking to you out of the book of Proverbs, primarily the first chapter, just two or three verses I want to focus on here in a moment. Proverbs is one of those books of what's called poetry right in the middle of the Bible. It's back in the Old Testament, but it was after the history books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and then we have the history of the nation of Israel all the way up to Judges and Samuel into 1 Kings, 2 Kings, the history of the nation of Israel. Then there's five books in the middle there, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Songs of Solomon, and Ecclesiastes. So Proverbs is in that book, and it was written, as it says in the very opening verse, by Solomon, King Solomon, son of David, one of the greatest kings ever. I think that's laid out for us. And first of all, you know, Proverbs are those bits of wisdom, great help. Proverbs is not a book that's going to get you eternal salvation, but it's going to give you great skills for living in this world. It's going to give you a lot of basic training on how to survive in this cold world we have. It's one of the best tools. If y'all remember, Brother George used to tell us this a lot. If there's a book in the Bible to start reading, you don't know where to start, start with the book of Proverbs. If there's a book you want to give to the kids to start off, give them the book of Proverbs, because it has so much learning in it. We've got all these how-to books. I mean, many of you know that when I have spare time, if I'm traveling, I'll find me a bookstore and go to, especially an old used bookstore, and try to go through, and I always am amazed that there's jillions of how-to books left on the shelves. People buy them and read them, and then they end up in these used bookstores. Reading the book of Proverbs, you wouldn't need all your how-to books if we'd read the book of Proverbs and analyze it a little bit. But first of all, you know, when you look at a book and the writer of it, you got to determine, is that writer qualified to speak? You know, we've had a lot of books written by people who weren't really qualified to write books, didn't have the experience to write books. But and so you should always make that examination, is who's the writer, and does he speak from personal knowledge or personal experience, or does he have any expertise in this area that could, so that he's writing with some kind of experience so that you could learn from it. The book of Proverbs was written by Solomon. If you go back into 1 Kings, you don't have to go there. When I'm there, I want to read it to you a little bit. 1 Kings, in the second chapter, King David has died. Solomon's father has died. In 1 Kings, 2nd chapter, verse 12, it says, "Then Solomon sat upon the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was established greatly." Turns out he had a greater kingdom than his father ever had. And there's a reason for that. If you go to chapter 3 of 1 Kings, it says Solomon, one of the first things he did, he went up to Bethel, which was the high place to go worship the Lord at that time. It's where the Ark of the Covenant was located, and for a long period of time. In chapter 3 of 1 Kings, verse 3, it said, "And Solomon loved the Lord. He loved the Lord. He walked in His statutes, and he went up and prayed the king," in verse 5. "And in a dream at night, God asked Solomon, 'Ask what I shall give thee.'" And boy, I couldn't think of anything better than if the Lord came to me and said, "Don, what do you want? Just ask me what you want." Boy, I got a whole list I could roll out here, you know. Get rid of all my bills, pay my bills, give me plenty of money, you know, give me a new car, give me a house. I just roll down the list, get rid of all my enemies. That's not what Solomon asked for. When the Lord asked the king Solomon what he wanted, He said, verse 9, give thy servant an understanding heart. Give me wisdom, Lord. Give me an understanding heart to discern thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this so great a people? I need help. If I'm going to be king, I need help knowing how to decide between good and bad, and, you know, good and evil, and right and wrong. I need to be able to discern those things, because I've got a great people here. So I need understanding. I need wisdom, Lord. Help me with that. He asked this thing in verse 10, and the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Lord came and said, you didn't ask for thyself to live long. You didn't ask for a long life. You didn't ask for thyself great riches, which is what I said. Boy, that's the first thing on my mind. Give me a long life. Give me great riches. Neither did you ask for me to take the life of your enemies. You didn't ask for any of those things. Instead, you asked for wisdom to judge my people. Greatly pleased the Lord. And he says, okay. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou did not ask, riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like thee unto all the days. I'm giving you what you asked for. I'm going to give you great understanding, great wisdom, like no king has ever had and no king ever will have. I'm also going to give you great honor and riches. You didn't ask for them. Because you didn't ask, I'm going to give you riches and honor and fame. And he made Solomon the greatest king in the history of the world, the wisest man in the history of the world. We can go over and read Matthew 12:42, and it tells us that as great as Solomon was, he wasn't greater than Christ. Christ was greater than Solomon. But setting Christ aside, Solomon was the wisest, smartest, richest man in the history of the world, the greatest king. His kingdom exceeded that of his father's. One of the first jobs, you know, that came before him, first question that came before him that started his reputation was, these two women, harlots, had children the same night. One woman rolled over on top of her baby and killed it, smothered it to death. She got in the middle of the night and swapped babies. She wanted the live baby, so she swapped babies with the other woman that was there. The woman woke up and her baby was alive, was now dead, and she could tell, that's my baby that other woman has. But the two of them were there alone and nobody knew, and it was just an argument, you know, one against the other. And so they came before King Solomon, and seeing Solomon listen to this argument back and forth, you know, I have the live baby, no, I have the live baby, no one knew. King Solomon says, well, I saw this, bring me a sword. And he ordered his guys to split the baby in half, give half to each one of them. Good practical answer for a man, isn't it? But then the woman whose baby it was that was alive said, no, don't do that. Give the baby to the other woman. Don't kill it. Give it to the other woman. Solomon knew then who was the mother of the live baby, and he awarded it to her. Shows you the wisdom he had in knowing the personalities of people. Then the king answered and said, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. She is the mother thereof. And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment. So Solomon was king over all Israel. And he reigned, they had this great kingdom, and he started building his kingdom. And he had all these other kings come to him and make deals with him because they heard how wise Solomon was. Verse 21 of chapter 4, and Solomon reigned over all kingdoms, from the river unto the land of the Philistines and into the borders of Egypt. Israel grew huge, looked like the Roman kingdom there. They brought presents and served Solomon all the days of his life. Verse 29, and God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as to the sand that is in the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all children of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt. You've heard of Confucius over in the Far East, all the wise men that came out of China, and he said he exceeded their wisdom. You know, the Confucians, all those little sayings they have that are a lot like Proverbs, wise sayings. Solomon exceeded all the people in the East and all the wisdom of Egypt, all the pharaohs of Egypt who built the great temples and all the great engineering. Solomon's wisdom exceeded all of them. And he spake 3,000 proverbs. 3,000 proverbs he spoke and wrote. And his songs were 1,005. He wrote that many songs. not only was he wise, but he had great wisdom in writing Proverbs, and he had the ability to write great songs. And there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from the kings of the earth, which has heard of his wisdom. All kings from around the world came to see Solomon and listen to him. Solomon went about building the kingdom, and it tells in the next few chapters how great his kingdom was. And he had one person that heard about him and wanted to come and see him, and that's in chapter 10. And when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to prove him with hard questions. Sheba came all the way from the south down in Africa, because she heard down there all the way how wise and famous and honorable Solomon was. So she came, and she's going to put hard questions to him. And says she came and brought a great train with her, a great entourage. And she showed up, the queen of Sheba. And Solomon told her all the questions. He answered every question, didn't spare one. He told her, answered every question she had. And when the queen of Sheba had seen all Solomon's wisdom and the house that he had built and the meat at his table and all his riches and glory, and she said to the king, "It was a true report that I heard in my own hand. I didn't believe it. I did not believe the words until I came, and mine eyes have seen it, and behold, the half was not told to me." And the half has not been told. It's where it came from. The queen of Sheba said, "I didn't even know the half of it. Everybody came and told me all this, and it was so big, I didn't believe it. I said, there's nobody can be that great. Now I've come and seen my own eyes, and I didn't even get the half of it. It's even much greater than I even began to realize." Verse 23, "So King Solomon exceeded all the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom." So the man that wrote the book of Proverbs was the wisest man in the history of the world. We couldn't have anybody better to write a book for us on teaching us about life. That's why it's a great teaching tool that we don't even begin to use near enough with our kids. But King Solomon, as great as he was, people bowed down to him. People came in awe of him. I mean, he's the greatest king ever. If you can imagine a king that you've seen in the movies or the cartoons or whatever, how everybody comes down and bows to him and honors him and worships him, Solomon exceeded all of that. He was the greatest. Even Sheba said, "I've never seen anybody this great, greater than I expected." King Solomon was truly great. Well, let's ask a question. How did he treat his mother? Remember who his mother was? Bathsheba. She was one that had the adulterous affair with his father David. She was one that was out bathing in the nude and allowed David to see her. I have a feeling she knew what she was doing. She enticed him. She enticed him, and David was guilty too. I mean, he was the one that had her affair and had her husband killed. He married Bathsheba, and of course, the Lord punished him with that. But then the Lord blessed him, and the Lord recognized that Bathsheba was his wife, and through that, they had this son called Solomon. Well, how did King Solomon treat Bathsheba? He didn't bow down to anybody. I mean, he was big and strong and a king and powerful and glorious, rich. 1 Kings 2, verse 9, Bathsheba came to visit Solomon about his brother. Bathsheba, therefore, went unto King Solomon to speak unto him for Adonijah. And the king rose up. King didn't stand up for anybody. You stand for the king. But when his mother walked in the room, King Solomon rose up to meet her. He didn't stand to meet Gries. The kings came to him and bowed down. He didn't go bow down to other kings. But when his mother walked in the room, he rose up to meet her and bowed himself unto her. King Solomon knew how to treat his mother. He knew how to honor his mother. And sat back down on his throne and caused a seat to be set for the king's mother, and she sat on his right hand. No greater honor could you have, we know, than sitting down on the right hand of a king. That's where Christ is today, on the right hand of God. Solomon reserved that position for his mother. He rose up and met her. He didn't rise up to anybody. Nobody bowed down to him, yet he bowed down to his mother. There's a great lesson in there for us about how King Solomon treated his mother. And this is the guy that now has written the book of Proverbs. I'm reminded of the story in the 19th chapter of John, I believe it is, where Christ was on the cross. And right before he died, he looked down and he saw his mother there. And he knew he was fixing to die and go away, and he had concern about his mother. His father's obviously dead by now. And he looked down, he saw his mother, and he saw the Apostle John. And he said, "Mother, observe thy son." And he looked at the Apostle John and said, "Observe thy mother." And from that day forward, John took Mary home to live with him the rest of the days. He took care of her. Jesus made sure his mother was taken care of before he died. Look how Jesus treated his mother. He made sure she was cared for the rest of our lives. There's wonderful examples there for us. Now let's go to the book of Proverbs. Let's talk about this now. Book of Proverbs, again, I'll tell you, is a great teaching tool that we don't utilize. I didn't utilize it near as much as I should have in raising my kids, and it is the absolute best book to use in raising your children. They get old enough to read. Every problem that is in life can be addressed by the Proverbs of Solomon. You've got all these subjects that are hard to bring up. Very hard to bring up with my kids. How do you talk about sex and all those type of situations and drugs and alcohol and all the problems that come up in all of our day-to-day lives? If you'll read Solomon's Proverbs, they're covered in there. You can get in there. Now, they may not refer to crack cocaine, but they'll tell you about the addictions. And all you got to do is say, tell your kids, let's read the first chapter today. Let's read the second chapter tomorrow. And as I remember Brother George telling us, Proverbs has 31 chapters. There's 31 days in most half the months. You can do the math, a chapter a day. And then sit down and visit with your kids about it and say, what do you think that means? Well, could it mean this? You don't have to worry about how do you raise the subject of sex. King Solomon will raise it for you. Then you can discuss it. And you can talk about what happened here. What's he warning us about here? What is he telling us about the dangers of infidelity in our life? What's he telling us about the dangers of when we go off and get enticed away by sinners? What is he telling us about the dangers when somebody comes to you and says, let's combine our money together and go do this venture? He tells us when most time when people are asking you to combine their money, it's because you're putting in more money than they are. A lot of practical advice in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs opened up. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgments in equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. If you're young and don't know a whole lot, these are going to make sense to you. You're going to understand them. Subtlety to the simple. And then look what he says. But the same Proverbs, a wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. These are written in such a manner that not only the simple can understand them, but the wise men are going to see, hey, that's got a deeper meaning, and I'm going to learn from that too. To understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. Go to Proverbs. Let's look at a couple examples here of what we're talking about. Go to Proverbs 20 and 29. It's the one I like because I identify with it so much. Just to show you what we're talking about here, what these proverbs mean. It's easy to understand for the simple, but the wise man reads that and goes, whoa, that's deep. 20 and 29, the glory of young men is their strength, and the beauty of old men is the gray head. I understand that. You can read that and say, yeah, the glory of young men is their strength. Young men are usually stronger. And the beauty of old men is the gray head. Gray head, I guess. I'm qualified for that, clearly. But a wise man will read that and go, wow. If you're a young man and you want to do business, you've got the strength, you've got the energy, you've got the time. You'll work 19 hours a day. But what do you need? You don't have the experience. You need to get yourself a partner. Get somebody you can counsel with, somebody that's been there and done that. It can give you that guidance. The two work together, great. A young man needs help from an older man. Same way with women. Younger women need the help. Young mothers need the help of the older mothers. That's what he's telling us here. Younger mothers have the strength and the energy. You know, we all parents say, boy, I wish, now that I've got the time, I wish I'd have had the energy to do, I had the energy back when I was a kid. Didn't have the wisdom to know what to do with it. And that's what he's telling us here. And he said, and the beauty of old men is the gray head. My problem is I get these backwards. Now that I'm up in a few years, I still think I'm 21, 22, 23, and I can go out and I can lift what I did then. I can haul it away. And, first thing I know, I'm going, oh, my gosh, what have I done to my back? I can't get out and jog like I used to. I can't get in a hurry like I used to. I want to do a young man's work. And it said, no, that's not the job of the old man. Old man is to use your wisdom. and provide guidance. I know now, hopefully I'm smart enough, I'll get some young kids to do the moving and I'll tell them how to do it. I'll give them instruction and guidance. That's what he's telling us. These two, see, it makes simple, has simple meaning, but it goes really in depth. Another one I'll go over with you quickly is go over to chapter 26, verse 20, and this is one we all need to learn. Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. We know that. My son and I have been on lots of scout campouts. If you don't have any wood, you run out of wood, your fire's going to go out, isn't it? No wood, there's no fire. But then he finishes it, and he said, so, in comparison, I want to compare that with something else. So, where there is no talebearer, the strife ceases. Where there's nobody gossiping, there is no strife. You know, one of the biggest problems we have is when we sow strife in the church. We get out and we start talking. There's a problem going on, and I'm going to stir it up a little bit by talking about it. I find something bad about somebody, and I'm going to spend all my time spreading that word. When most people wouldn't even know it, and there wouldn't be any strife, except for me being a talebearer and spreading that word. Just like when there is no wood, the fire goes out. When there's no talebearer, there's no strife. We should all remember that. You know, our mothers told us years ago, if you can't say something good about somebody, don't say anything at all. That's exactly what we're talking about here. It's exactly what Proverbs. Now, see, that's easy to understand. Where there is no wood, the fire goeth out. I'm a kid, young kid. I can understand that. But he says, so, because that's simple. So, when there's no talebearer, there's no strife. You know, Facebook is a good thing, I guess. It does. It's a great communication tool. When you use it for that, it's great. But, you know, we've also seen where Facebook has caused a lot of problems. It's an easy way to spread a lot of rumors and a lot of gossip. Now, I want to know what's going on, and I appreciate in times past when I'll learn stuff, people tell me stuff because they read it on Facebook. It's a great way to spread communication. If you've got news, you've got a child being born, you've got sickness, it can be a great tool. But it also can be a great danger, and not just Facebook. I use that as an example, but anything of social media, that is the phenomenon today. We should keep our tail bearing off our communication. Let's go back now to Proverbs, first part of Proverbs, where we were. What King Solomon's telling us here in the first six verses is, if you read Proverbs, you'll understand good and bad. You'll understand the difference between wise and foolish, and you'll understand the difference between right and wrong. What I want to focus on now is three verses. First chapter, verse 7, 8, and 9. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That means a respect of the Lord. Fear of the Lord, the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instructions of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. For they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head, and chains about thy neck. These proverbs were written to give us day-to-day understanding of life and how to deal with it, especially these here which talk about the mother and the father. But proverbs were written primarily not for us. They benefit us, but they weren't written for us. They were written for the Lord so that we would behave appropriately the Lord. If you go to chapter 30 of Proverbs, verse 7, 8, 9, it's really important that we understand what he's talking about. Everything about Proverbs we do unto the Lord. He said, two things have I required of thee, deny them me not before I die. Remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. I don't want to be poor and I don't want to be rich. I don't want to be poor, but boy, you know, I love to be rich. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me. Give me only enough food that I need. I want a kitchen loaded with food, so I've always got ready. He says, no, just give me the food that I need. Don't give me poor. Help me not to be poor, but don't make me rich. And give me only the food I need. It's like Jesus says, give us this day our daily bread. We don't need bread for the future. We don't need to hoard it up, like he says here. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a supply of food, especially if you know there's a problem coming in. But that's not what we're talking about here. He said, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? If I'm rich and if I'm got food and I'm full, I'm going, you know, I'm doing pretty good by myself. I don't need the Lord. I'll deny the Lord if I'm rich or if I've got more food, more material things than I need, then I don't need the Lord. And that's what it'll make me do. And I don't need to be in that boat. Remember, all the things of Proverbs are about teaching us how to live and honor God. Or, lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. If I'm poor, then I'm tempted to go out and steal it. And then what kind of a child of God am I then? People look at me and say, well, he claims to be a Christian, but he steals all his life. Don't make me rich and don't make me poor. Give me only a portion that I need. Like Paul said, we need moderation in all things. We don't want to be poor and we don't want to be rich. You know, we see these people who win the lottery, millions and millions of dollars, and I understand a lot of them are miserable after they win it, don't know what to do with it, and they have everybody handing them. So these Proverbs were written for the Lord. Now I'm going to go back now and look at verses 7, 8, and 9 of chapter 1. We'll stay there pretty much now the rest of my time. There's a few things I want to point out. First of all, the family, the mother and the father and children, was an ideal initiated by the Lord. The Lord created the family for us to live on this earth. Look how he says in verse 8, my son, we got children, hear the instructions of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother. God created the family. Real quickly, I'm going to turn back to Genesis because we know where this started, and Solomon understood this well. Verse 27 of chapter 1, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he them. Male and female created he them, and God blessed them and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it. He made them male and female for a reason. He created the family for a reason. Get over in chapter 2 of Genesis, verse 24. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife. Man's got to get out from his own family, go create a new family with his wife and cleave unto her, and they shall be one flesh, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. It's the only time in the Bible that God blesses nakedness between a man and a woman that are husband and wife. The rest of the time, you can go over Leviticus. He condemns it. I've spoken about that before. He condemns it. Every other combination of men and women, men and men and women, except the husband and wife, and he blesses that relationship. He created the family. He created a husband and wife to have that sexual union that they could then produce children. And out of that, the two of them become one flesh, and they produce one flesh. Look at the oneness that God created in the family. It's a tremendous blessing to us. And that's what, first of all, is that we have God originated the family. Originated that this is the way it is supposed to be. A man and a woman marrying, becoming intimate with each other. And if they produce children, then the children are part of that same family. And that's what he intended, what he intended from first. Now, we've seen a lot of times where we have in this world, a lot of times we have single parents. For especially tragic reasons, I know Brother Kenny's been through this, I've been through this, many of you have too, where we've lost a spouse. I lost a spouse and still had children. Scared me to death. I didn't know what I was going to do. And the Lord will bless a single parent, especially those that have faced a tragedy. He will bless a single parent. I couldn't have gotten by during my time in trying to raise my children without the help of the Lord. I remember just almost breaking down on the hood of my car, sitting on the hood of my car in a hospital parking lot, trying to figure out what in the world I was going to do. And the Lord richly blessed me, and he will bless those times when it's needed. The Lord will bless that. It was intended for there to be a mother and a father, just like he teaches here. Second, we'll teach here that a family is based, especially the foundation of it, is on the fear of God. Verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Every family needs to be based on a respect for the Lord, respect and guidance of the Lord. And that's what we're told. We should be That's the first thing we should learn is about the Lord. We should teach that to our children. We should bring them to church. Teach our children. And if you mess up as a mother or a father, guess what? You get a second shot at it. You get to be a grandmother or a grandfather. And we know you make mistakes as mothers and fathers. You can't make mistakes as a grandmother and grandfather. We know that's the best ones. Mothers sometimes have trouble. Grandmothers are just near perfect. We all know that. So the Lord gives you an extra shot at it, and we should use that opportunity too to use our experience to teach our children. But the fear of the Lord, we've got to have the understanding and the appreciation of the Lord in our marriage to make it work right. Number three, the family is the first school. Family is the first school we go to. If you're raising a family and they got a child in there, you're going to school long before you go to what we call public schools or private school, any kind of a formal school. It's the first place we go to school. Think about all the other animals and kingdoms, all the other animals in the world. They have a lot of instinct stuff. As small infants, babies, they go out on their own and do stuff on their own. You know, those little babies, birds are kicked out of the nest really early and learn how to fly on their own. They do a lot of stuff instinctively. Us men and women, we don't do quite so many stuff instinctively. And we can't leave the nest too early or we'll never survive. We die on our own. It was intended, the Lord intended it this way so that the parents would teach their young kids. Take them to school. And look here, it says, "My son, hear the instruction of thy father." The instruction of the father. He's an instructor. "And forsake not the law of thy mother." So the family is the first school. And that's what Solomon is telling us here. Parents have a job to do at home schooling their kids. Whether or not they choose to continue schooling them or put them in public schools for their other type of formal training, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about those basic things of life that we need to teach our kids at an early age. Now notice the difference here. Fathers instruct, but mothers give the law. Now that also means teaching too, but there's a difference between these two. There's a difference between even the way it's worded here between the fathers and mothers, and that goes to the next point I want to make. The roles of the father and mother. Both of them have responsibilities in raising children. I'm here Mother's Day today, but Father's Day is coming soon, so we'll hit both these at the same time. Hear the instruction of the father, and forsake not the law of the mother. It doesn't say the mother's job here is to change diapers and cook. It doesn't say the father's job is to go down and work all the time. He doesn't have time to spend with the kids, so the mother needs to assume that role. It's not what it says at all. There are two roles here. And it's important. Now, a lot of times, you know, the Lord will give grace to when you have a single parent. You have to try to fill in the role of the other people. I fell in that role one time, and I panicked, didn't know what to do. I fell back, and I remembered what my mother taught me so that I could try to fill that role. Didn't do it near as good as a mother. But you have to compensate for that because there are two roles here, the instruction of the father. We know fathers are a little bit more hard-lined, not quite as compassionate as the mothers, and we go out and teach them the basic things. We'll go out and teach them the things about how to do work ethic, that type of oriented. We'll teach them all those basic things of life. That's why it's an instruction. That's why it talks about, heed the instruction of the father. The father will instruct and teach you. If you're on the farm, and go out and teach you how to work on the farm. You know, in town like I did, I learned the tools of my father's trade. And forsake not the law of the mother. What's the law of the mother? There's some things that you learn from your mother. A lot of times it's how to cook and those type of things, but even sons learn a lot of things from the mother. I don't walk into anybody's house with mud on my shoes. Where did I learn that? If I go stay over here with Brother Joe and Brother Beth and they let me have a room and I spend the night with them and I walk in the house with muddy shoes and get it all over Beth's carpet and go in there and mess up her bedroom and leave it torn up and my bed unmade, she's going to say, "Didn't his mother teach him anything?" That's what we learn from our mothers. Mothers give us great skills in dealing with other people. Not that, you know, fathers do, we're actually usually going to be tough, you know. sometimes fathers will say, you know, if he does that, you bow up to him and you, you know, y'all address it. That's not the way mothers teach you. Mothers teach you the skills you need to learn. I learned how to use a knife and fork and how not to belch at the table from my mother. I learned the things about getting around the house and how you, the grace that you're supposed to have in day-to-day life. You learn that from the mother. All the skills you will need to deal with other people, we learn from our mothers. Now look, heed the instruction of the father. That's got a present tense sense about it. Heed the instruction, current instruction. Listen to what your dad tells you and do it. Learn from your dad. You should learn from that. Dad has to be home. Dad has to make sure he dedicates the time to fill that role. One of the biggest problems we've got in this world today is we've got a lot of household with no father in them. For various reasons, and I won't go into all those, but for various reasons, one of the problems we have is that fathers are not at home fulfilling that role of instruction. And we know that a lot of times the father has to be the one, the disciplinarian. Too many times that's pushed over on the mother. That's not supposed to be the mother's role. There's some discipline that comes with being a mother, but the father is the disciplinarian and the head of that in the household. And that's the current instruction. If a son or daughter giving you a problem, that's where the father ought to step in and take care of it, take charge of it. That's the current instruction. But look, the role of the mother is differently. It says, forsake not the law of thy mother. You take the law of the mothers with you. You learn those basic skills, but you can learn from your dad, but you learn also elsewhere. But the skills of the mother that you learn from the law of the mother, you take those with you throughout life. And he says, you don't forsake those ever. You always remember the things your mother taught you about how to deal with other people, about how to deal with your own spouse, about how to deal with people in general, how to be nice, how to say please and thank you. All of those life skills are taught by the mother in the house. That's the difference between, and see, he said, forsake not that. A lot of times we get away, and especially if we're young, and we finally get away from the household, as I was so glad to do, finally get away from out from under my mother and dad and go to college. It's amazing now when I got away and I was doing stuff and I'm going, ooh, my mother wouldn't approve of me doing this. If my mother knew I was here, she'd come in and grab a hold of my ear and lead me drag me out of the place, probably. Forsake not the law of thy mother. You should learn those things about your mother taught you around the house and take those with you for the rest of your life. That's the importance of the role of the mother. You're going to learn a lot of the manly stuff that you learn, not only from your father, but you're going to learn that in the day-to-day life, dealing with your work and your bosses and all other things like that. But there's nothing wrong with the father having a good job and working at it, but he needs to take time to make sure he fulfills this role in the home. Nothing wrong with the mothers working. A lot of mothers choose to work, but they've still got to make sure responsible to fill this Roman hole. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with a mother wanting to be a mother, a stay-at-home mom. I don't want to be a stay-at-home mom. I couldn't be a cook, a cleaner, the compassionate person. I can't fix. So, you know, everything, I could just come up with a laundry list of all the things that the women do around the house. It's a whole lot more individual items than the men do. They have much more talented in raising a family than the men do. So it's not just a homemaker. It's everything from a nurse to a psychotherapist, all the way down the list of the things that the mother has to do. But it takes the role of both the father and the mother. I want to skip over real quick to Timothy. Apostle Paul tells us in Timothy, I want to point out one thing that's come to mind. 2 Timothy, 1st chapter, verse 5. Apostle Paul is writing a letter to Timothy, and look what he says to him. When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, you have great faith, Timothy. And when I think about this, he said, which dwelt first in thy grandmother, Lois, and thy mother, Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also. We go over in the 16th chapter of Acts, which we've been studying on Wednesday nights, and we find out that Timothy there, 16 verses 1 through 3, Timothy's father was a Greek. He was not a Jew. Wasn't trained in the scriptures. He didn't know anything about the scriptures. But the Apostle Paul saw in him a great knowledge of the scriptures because of the work of his mother and his grandmother. Timothy became the man of God that he is because of his mother and his grandmother. And they fulfilled a role that apparently he didn't have a spiritual head of the house to do, because his father was a Greek and may not have known the scriptures. The next thing I want to point out here is the what I would call the submissiveness of children to the parents. As, you know, children, we don't want to hear this. As young men, I didn't want to hear this. But Solomon tells us, my son, hear the instruction of the father and forsake not the law of the mother. Do what your mother and dad tell you. Now, that's hard. My dad reminded me many times when I was in junior high, my favorite word seemingly was why. Don, I need you to do this. Why? Well, I don't always know why, but he does. You know, and I know that's some of the answers just because I told you so. That's really not a bad answer. We don't like that as kids, but that's not a bad answer because they know, they've been there, and they understand what we need. Now, you know, if you were smart out there like me, I thought I knew what I needed. And we always think we know what we need when we're 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. Solomon here tells us, son, hear the instruction of the father. Forsake not the law of the mother. Be submissive to them. Another reason to be submissive is because what's in verse 9? It comes with a great promise. If you're submissive and you listen to your father's instructions and you do it and you take the law of your mother and you don't forsake it and you apply it the rest of your life, there's a great reward that comes with that. Verse 9, for they shall be, this is the instructions, and the law of your mother and the instructions of your father, if you take those and apply them in your life, they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. It changed. I'll talk about that in a minute. But they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head. You ever see a young man or a young woman that is extremely well behaved, says, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, goes about their business, has a good work ethic, do all the things right, and you go, boy, that kid's mother sure taught him right. That's the reward that comes to you. You're viewed as a person of great grace because you heeded the instruction of the father and the law of the mother. And they shall be like chains about your neck. That's not talking about chains as we think of. That's talking about jewelry. You listen to the instruction of your father and heed the laws of your mother, you're going to be a very graceful person. That's a great quality you're going to have that people are going to admire tremendously because you're differently, you act differently. You follow what your mother and dad told you to. You have, and it's going to make you a beautiful person. It decorates you up like, you know, like we talk about a jewelry decorates up a woman. That's what it means when it's talking about chains about the neck. It's what jewelry does to one of us. Clothing and jewelry makes us more attractive, generally. You can tell the difference in somebody that's coming to work for you, having had the opportunity to interview a number of people. He's come to work, try to go for employment. You can tell those that have been raised right, and that those have been raised absent some of the necessary training they should have. Either that or they forsook the law of their mother. It comes with great promise. It says that here, the great promise is, if you go back to Exodus, if you remember I can't remember which commandment it is now, it says, honor thy father and mother that thy days may be long on the earth. Honor thy father and mother, and the Lord will give you long life. I'll close with this, the book of Ephesians, chapter 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. There's a great blessing and a reward that not only Solomon tells us, but the Apostle Paul tells us there too, and we learned it, should have learned it, with one of the Ten Commandments. Honor thy father and mother. If you notice all the other commandments, a lot of them are don't do this, don't do this. 9 out of the 10 are don't do this. That one says positively, honor thy father and mother. And the promise that comes with it is that your days will be long. And as Solomon tells us, and you'll be viewed differently. People will look at you and admire you because of your grace and your natural beauty. I'm not talking about physical beauty. I'm talking about the natural beauty of your personality. Especially because of the law of the mother, as Solomon tells us here. You've been very kind to me with your attention. I hope you will, these things can be applied in your life, and that we, all of us, will go about honoring our father and mother like Solomon did and like Christ did.